Mejia v. Gonzalez. Ms. Sharma Crawford.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a case that took a very simple proposition and made it incredibly complex. And what made it complex was the fact that the petitioner had multiple prior contacts with immigration, and I don't think that that is being contested at all. The question that came up in the immigration court initially was a 1999 Florida immigration court order that ordered the petitioner removed in absentia. And when the petitioner came in contact with immigration authorities in 2004, the government made a determination not to reinstate that order and not to execute that order, and they could have done either one. In the record, I believe the attorney for the government indicated that, well, we don't have all the documents we need to reinstate this order. There's nothing to indicate why they couldn't simply have just executed the order if they had believed that that order was still valid and available. In fact, that became the crux of the argument at the initial hearing before the immigration court. And the issue became, is the petitioner eligible for adjustment of status based on his wife's application, provided that there's this order out there? And as I was getting ready for this oral argument, I came across a board decision that seems to address this question. And the board decision is Matter of Bahata, B-A-H-T-A, and it is found at 22 INN Decision 1381.
Have you furnished that to the government, that decision?
I haven't, Judge. I'd be happy to. As I said, I ran across it as I was getting ready for this argument. But in it, the board makes a startling determination. And what they say is whether or not an order is reinstated or executed is within the sound discretion of the Attorney General. We all agree on that. But what they say is that when DHS does not or cannot reinstate the order against a previously deported alien, but instead places the alien in removal proceedings, the alien may demonstrate statutory eligibility for cancellation of removal. Now, that seems to address the very question that was presented, or the immigration judge was presented with, is can he now move statutorily for adjustment of status? Cancellation of removal, as this court is well aware, is also a form of relief under Section 240 of the Act. And adjustment of status is also a form of relief. So by taking the board's indication, it appears that he could statutorily demonstrate that he is eligible. Now, at the hearing in front of the immigration court, the sole question before the immigration judge was can we continue the matter to allow the petitioner to present proper evidence for a merits hearing on his adjustment application. The immigration judge initially said, I find him statutorily ineligible to file for adjustment based on two criteria that were actually not even charged within the notice to appear. The first being that he was inadmissible based upon 212A9A, which is that he hadn't, if in fact this order had been reinstated, or I'm sorry, had been executed, then he had not sought permission from the Attorney General to enter. Board decision's very clear on that, Your Honor, and that is that an immigration judge has authority to nunk-pro-tunk grant an I-212 waiver, which would cure that ground. The second ground that was raised by the immigration judge, again, sua sponte, was 212A6C, which is the material misrepresentation. And the material misrepresentation coming from the Guatemalan asylum claim that was previously filed under a prior contact with immigration. Again, that matter is subject to a waiver based upon an extreme hardship to a spouse or a spouse, parent, or a child. And in this instance, it was clear from the record that the spouse, because the petitioner was a derivative on the spouse's application, clearly even in time, albeit just by a moment, the spouse would be granted initially, and thereby the court could consider, in fact, a waiver and the extreme hardship to the spouse or the petitioner's wife in granting that waiver. But those issues were never fully brought to a merits hearing because the court ultimately said, well, I find him statutorily ineligible. And by the way, even if this matter was brought to a hearing, I would deny it as a matter of discretion. The problem with that, Your Honor, is that it would be as if you were in a criminal trial and at the arraignment, the defendant pleads not guilty. And the trial judge says, well, I'm going to go ahead and find you guilty because you've presented no evidence to show that you're not guilty. It was a master calendar hearing, which is a docket call. It was not a hearing on the merits of the application. In fact, that there were no witnesses presented beyond the petitioner's wife to establish the prima facie eligibility for which the petitioner was seeking a continuance. So under those circumstances, even though the government wishes to say, well, this is ultimately a moot point because the court would have, in his own discretion, denied adjustment, the question isn't would he have in the future. The question is, was he statutorily at least eligible to make the application and reserve the purpose of or the merits of the adjustment application to a day when it could have been fully heard by the court. So based on those situations, it would be our position that the immigration court did in fact abuse his discretion in failing to grant that continuance. I would also like to note for the court that the petitioner's wife has now in fact gotten her lawful permanent residence, and so it wasn't speculative that was she going to be able to adjust her status. It wasn't speculative that he would have been a derivative on the application. It was a real possibility then, and I would submit to the court it played out in the real world because she ultimately did receive her benefit of adjustment of status. I know that the government cites to Payday as claiming that is the case that controls in this case. And I see my light is on, and I will reserve that argument, and I'll address it at my rebuttal.
Mr. Zanfardino?
Good morning. May it please the court, Richard Zanfardino for the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. This is a case about discretion, plain and simple. This case is controlled by the Payday case. Just to correct a couple of points, though, initially, the petitioner, to be candid with the court, there are so many problems with this adjustment application, it's kind of hard to know where to begin. We have, working backwards, the ultimate application was denied in discretion by the immigration judge. That action was actually contemplated in the Payday case, citing the board's decision in matter of Garcia, that the adjustment application would ultimately be denied in the exercise of discretion. The motion for a continuance was also denied in the exercise of discretion, and one of the Payday cases also pointed out is that the ultimate hopelessness of the application is a valid basis for the immigration judge to deny the continuance. Still working backwards. There was no good moral character shown by the petitioner in this case, the filing of the false asylum claim back in 1998. Working backwards again, he self-executed his order of removal. Petitioner's counsel has mentioned that he wasn't physically removed by the government, therefore that removal order was not executed. But I would direct the court to section 212A9AII, 1182A9AII. The petitioner's departure from the United States self-executed that order of removal. Now, he had had numerous contacts with the Immigration Service, four, coming and going as he pleased, which was another issue raised by the immigration judge in denying the continuance motion. Ultimately, what we have here are two arenas. We have the arena where the immigration judge denied adjustment of status in the exercise of discretion and also pointed out, as did the board, the numerous ways that petitioner was not statutory eligible for discretion. But the other arena we have is the Payday arena, which is the denial of the motion to continue. There, unlike the aliens in Subhan and Ahmed, where the immigration judges simply gave a facial statement of denying, here the immigration judge gave a list that comports with Payday about the numerous ways that he would deny, which survive an abuse of discretion standard. We would also point out, in the Subhan decision itself, a list of valid reasons are given, including abuse of the immigration proceedings itself by remaining longer than they should. That's actually in the Subhan decision as well. So ultimately, the petitioner's claim, we would suggest, the most efficient answer we would suggest to this court is that this is controlled by Payday, and the immigration judge's reasons to deny the continuance reflect that adjustment of status is a privilege and not a right, and the petitioner's abuse of immigration proceedings do not warrant discretionary favor in this case. Unless there are any questions, we would submit.
Thank you, Mr. Sanfardino. Ms. Sharma-Crawford.
I would like to pick up with the Payday decision, since that is clearly where the government believes this case falls. The problem with the argument, Judge, is that when you read the immigration judge's decision, he doesn't deny the continuance as a matter of discretion. He denies the continuance to say he's not statutorily eligible, and then goes on to say, I would deny the adjustment application as a discretionary matter. So the initial crux of the denial of the motion for continuance was solely based on a statutory question. It was not based on a discretionary denial at that point. Notwithstanding, the record's not clear as to whether or not that 1999 order was ever executed or not. And, in fact, a motion was filed with the Florida court to reopen. That Florida court never responded to the petitioner's motion. In fact, came back and said, we can't even tell you the status of the motion because the case is with the Board of Immigration Appeals, which is a little bit confusing, because obviously we would think that the Florida court would be able to advise us of the status of a case that's pending before it. But nonetheless, there's never been a determination made in that regard. And the one thing I do think that is important, Your Honors, is that if you look at the administrative record, there is no hearing notice whatsoever to that Florida court decision. I mean, you've got orders, you've got our motion to reopen, but there is no notice of hearing that is ever found in the administrative record, which would be consistent with what we tried to do by filing a motion to reopen. But even if that's all taken as true and well, it was only within the discretion of the government to be able to reinstate or execute that order. The petitioner was stuck with that decision once new removal proceedings were begun. And when the immigration judge denied the motion for continuance, he said so specifically on a statutory ground. And we would submit to you that his statutory analysis was completely incorrect. And if that is incorrect, then at that point, the petitioner should have been allowed to perfect his adjustment application. The government also brings up that the petitioner failed to establish good moral character. Good moral character is not a prima facie element for adjustment. It is not a statutory requirement for adjustment of status. It may have very well been an issue to be addressed at the merits hearing, but certainly not at the point in the procedural point in where this case was postured at the time the motion for continuance was sought. If the board has no further questions, I would rest upon my briefs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.